This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Hank Gernardis! In the left field! Hit number 3,000! A run is scored!
Smith corks one into right down the line! It may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006.
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team. What a ride. The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, Cardinal fans. Welcome to the Wednesday edition of your newly titled Bow Ties and Bullshit, brought to you by your friends at Two Birds on a Bat and, of course, at the Patio Studios and our good friend Randy Green. InnovatedCompanies.com, residential, commercial, industrial, doesn't matter. Randy Green is the name you need to know and trust. Check out all their great services at InnovatedCompanies.com. They are the company to trust. Well, as I mentioned last week when I was talking to our friends that join us each week on Bow Ties and Bullshit, that I was hoping that we would be discussing playoff rosters, things like that, how they sit, decisions that are made for things such as that. Well, tis not to be, so we are going to dive into some other things when it comes to Cardinal baseball and kind of take a different look at breaking down things along the lines of where it went wrong. I had asked the question on Monday, would Alex Reyes have made a difference? On the surface, what I got a lot of from people was, well, no, because our defense sucked and our offense was non-existent at times and a couple guys in the bullpen, and that once again it was the bullpen. Well, the problem is you got to listen to the show, okay? You got to listen to it the way it's broke down, because at the end of the day, Alex Reyes, my point was is that he would have changed the dynamic of the pitching, whether it was bullpen or starting staff. Guys that were forced into roles early would have been able to come along at a rate they should have been. Believe me, if you think they wanted to bring up Ponce de Leon and Gomber and Hudson at the times they brought him up, you're wrong. They didn't. They would have preferred those guys to come later. There's another name that I didn't mention Monday that if everybody remembers that Mozeliak had kind of shed some light on a touchy subject, which was the bullpen at last offseason. He mentioned two names, not one. Jordan Hicks was one. The other name was Ryan Helsley, who, if you guys followed him at all, and I'm going to ask our friend Kyle Reese today about Ryan Helsley, because those are the two names that were mentioned last offseason in that really nice affair that we were at for SLU baseball. Well, Jordan Hicks obviously made the team early out of spring training. Ryan Helsley was pitching unbelievable and then gets a shoulder injury. So there's another guy that didn't come up that was really primed to be a bullpen piece for them, they felt, and we didn't get that either. So there's a domino effect when it comes to pitching, and some of that had to do with the fact that it isn't that Gomber and Ponce de Leon and Hudson can't pitch. It's that they're young and they ran out of gas. That's what it looked like to me. I mean, I know what I saw for 30 or 40 days straight. These guys were really good. And then they hit that wall, and now you can say, well, I don't believe in that. Okay, if you don't want to, that's fine. But at the end of the day, we got to look at it and say, where did it go wrong? Well, I got a treat for you today. We've had him on the show before. Our listeners loved him. He's a legend in his own mind, I will tell you that for sure. But I'll give him this. He is somewhat of a legend as well, not just in his own mind. But you guys loved him when he was on last time. He's a great, great Cardinal historian when it comes to just basically loving the Cardinals, living and dying with them. He can tell you what happened in a game 50 years ago if you'll let him. But he's a good baseball man. He had a tremendous baseball career as a high school baseball coach in this area. Let's welcome back legendary high school baseball coach from Edwardsville High School, Tom Pyle. What's going on?
Nothing to it. Ready to fire some bullets.
You're going to fire some bullets today. Well, the question I ask, and I'm sure, boy, you got your eyes open over there, boy, is I asked the question, where did it go wrong? So I can sit here and point at different things, but from a fundamental standpoint of baseball, where did it go wrong?
First of all, Jim, I want to apologize for my throat. That's from 54 seasons of coaching and 31 years in a classroom of five classes a day. My throat is shot from yelling every day.
Yelling?
I yelled a little bit. I'm known as a yeller. But anyway, let's get back to it. You said the key word right off the bat, fundamentals. You've got to be able to have fundamentals to win baseball games. And I'll use last night's game as an example and give you some examples. It's very simple. You got to be able to field the ball, the routine. You're going to make some errors, and that's part of the game. But you cannot make errors and also not make the play. There are certain plays that are not errors, and those plays have to be made. So fundamentally, defense was suspect at best at almost every position. Even the pitching staff, they foiled in fielding. Norris lost a game because of his fielding. Martinez lost a couple of games last year because of his fielding and this year. And so fielding, to me, is key, and especially at the professional level. Now, if you make the great play, that's a bonus in gravy. But the Cardinals made some good plays, but basically the fundamentals of defense and other fundamentals, which we'll get into, were lacking.
Yeah, and, you know, I'll say this. When you construct a baseball team, I'm going to tell you that my number one – I've been on this for years about the Cardinals. Listen, people want to – we want to blame somebody for something. I've said that 1,000 times over. Now, the blame sometimes is very well deserved. I mean, people wanted to lay everything on Matheny. I know you weren't the biggest Matheny fan, but then again, you weren't the biggest La Russa fan. The truth of the matter is this. Was Matheny going to win any managers of the year? Nope, absolutely not. But the bottom line is this. Good roster construction and a good bullpen make a lot of managers look smart, and that's a fact. Let me ask you this. My number one thing over this whole thing, Mike was not a great manager. I didn't think he was the biggest problem, okay? I'm not sure what Mozeliak's ever going to do as a full-time GM in this league when it comes to the full job. I think we know, if you do your homework at all, what you know is he is an unbelievable coordinator of the minor leagues. That is his specialty. That is where he's made a name for himself. He has built a minor league system basically, I'm not going to say from scratch, but it's a different minor league system now than it was when he got here, the way they approach it for sure. But let's just look at it across the board. And I brought it up this morning back in the war room before you got here. And that's this. Somebody brought up the 98 Yankees claiming to be the greatest team ever. And this guy started rattling off names. And he said, how can the greatest team ever have had Scott Brosius and Chad Curtis? And I said, let me tell you how. Because they had really good players. And they brought in these quote-unquote complimentary players and allowed these complimentary players to be who they were. The problem with the St. Louis Cardinals the last 3 years, folks, is we have guys that we used to bring in as complimentary players now trying to carry the water. And that's not what they do. Jed Jerko is not a water carrier. Okay? He's not. Colton Wong is not a water carrier. Not yet, I promise you. Okay? Water carriers are guys, and listen, you can take your stats and stick them up your ass. I don't care right now. I'm pissed off. Okay? Guys got a hit. I don't give a shit what their on-base percentage is, because guess what happens when they stop throwing balls? Now you got to get a hit because you're not walking, okay? You've got to get a hit when runners are on base. When it's second and third and two outs, a walk does shit. You got to get a hit. Somebody's got to get one. If it's not you, it better be the next guy. Somebody's got to get a hit, okay? What we have are a bunch of complimentary players. We don't have guys. We don't have Jim Edmonds. We don't have Scott Rolands. We don't have Albert Pujols. We don't have Mark McGwire. We don't bring in guys like Lance Berkman. We don't bring in these guys, Carlos Beltran, that we put in the middle of the order and tell everybody else, just do your job and I'll do the rest.
Well, you're right, Jim. and a lot of respects there. Number one, we haven't had a three-hitter since Holiday, and that's a big, big minus. Holiday, even as a three-hitter, his last 2 years was not as effective as he was early. And then you got to have guys backing up other guys. We haven't had it. We had DeJean hitting .300 there at the end of the year. He's hitting .236. Now he's got a little pop. He hit 19 homers, but he strikes out too much at a three spot. You've got to have somebody come through. You look at the Rizzo. He's a three hitter.
Your best hitter hits third.
Right, right. I like leadoff too, but third, you're right, best hitter. And then your power guy is a four guy. Now, Zuma at four wasn't so bad, but then your five slot was bad, except when Yachty was in there. But your two-hole was so bad, you had to move Yachty there occasionally. Then you had to move Martinez there at the two spot because he can hit. Our problem is very simple. Our better hitters are not that good defensively, and they cost you ball games. Now, I want to go back a little bit to your pitching. The pitchers were stressed big time. When you got to get three outs in Major League Baseball, that's very difficult, or in any league for that matter. But when you got to get four outs and sometimes five outs because you didn't make a play or you committed an error, that puts stress on you. And the younger, a guy like Gibson and Seavers and Koufax, they had stress with errors, but they had enough ability to pitch around it. Our guys were constantly pitching to another batter, it seemed, than the four outs and five outs. Plus, they didn't have enough stuff. Now, everybody wants to hit it on the corners. And you watch baseball and the good pitchers, they are constantly on the corners, high corner, low corner, inside, outside. And that's the way the game is. But when you get behind, you notice every time Bader comes up, he's got two strikes on him. Poor guy. You know, it's hard to hit with two strikes, especially when you're at the mercy of a good pitcher. Now, our guys are 2-0 or 3-1 or, you know, there's a big difference in pitching when you're 3-1, 2-0. And a big difference when you're hitting, when you're ahead 2-1, 3-1, 3-0. It's monumental. And it seemed like our hitters were always in the hole. And a part of that reason they're in the hole is because they swung at bad pitches. The other pitcher might get ahead 1-0 or 0-1. Then we would swing at a slider out of the strike zone. Now we're down 0-2 before we even get started. That was basically for most of the season. And I don't care if it's Carpenter or even Martinez, who was one of our best hitters. Martinez twice came up with the bases loaded, nobody out in key games, and struck out both times. And both times he struck out in different games, they were two balls thrown. He swung at two balls. And he is one of our best hitters. So you got, like you said earlier, Jim, you got to come through. Somebody's got to come through when you got second and third and nobody out, or second and third, one out. Somebody has got to come through, and Cardinals have, and all teams don't all the time. But let's take last night's game. I want to bring that up real quick.
Okay.
All right. The very first inning, they get a base hit. They get on base against Lester. Okay. The second batter comes up. He tries to bunt. What? Bunt in the first inning to try to get a guy in scoring position because you got 3-4 up? I never heard of anything like that. I've never seen anything like that because I'm a Cardinal fan. They never bunt early. They might bunt with a pitcher, or they might bunt. Now, our new guy did bunt a little bit more, thank God. But here's a manager, a pitcher, Bud Black, that's bunting a guy down there. Well, he didn't get the job done because there were some balls thrown, or he simply fouled it off. Okay, that happens. So he goes down 3-2. Starts the runner? What's this? You start a runner at 3-2 and nobody out? Come on. You what if he gets thrown out? Then all the people and all the parents and all the little guys would get mad at me because I sent the runner. He sends the runner. Well, the guy gets a gut shot. There's what I'm talking about. There's that one gut shot that Lester made a mistake on, and the guy gets a double. Now they got second and third. Nobody out. Here's where they got to kill him. They get Arrieta up, arguably one of the best hitters in baseball. Okay, he comes up. Did he fail? Yes and no. He hit a sac fly. Cardinals got second and third so many times this year, or a runner in third and nobody out. They got a pop-up or a strikeout. Or the guy walks, and then they hit into a double play with one out and a runner at third or second with one out. I mean, not all the time, but too many times to win a division. There are too many times that they don't come through. Now, this is not the important part I want to bring up. Now it's 1-0, and you got number four up. Okay, number four is Story, a good hitter, a good shortstop that can play defense and hit. So Story comes up. Now here's the key. During the first two batters, Lester barely missed outside, and they were called balls correctly. Here is the key. The next batter, Story, takes a borderline strike that's outside according to the chart on TV, and it's called a strike. All right. Next pitch is a little further outside, but because he called that, and he's got a few fans on him, and one player did look back, the catcher might have said something, and a few fans are yelling, the second pitch that's a ball is outside. Key, because now it's no balls and two strikes rather than 2-0. My God, it's key, because now the next pitch, Story's got to protect the plate. And in order to protect the plate, he's at the mercy of Lester, who's not going to give him a gut shot because it's not 3-2 or he's not down. So he throws him a high strike that's borderline. It probably was a strike, and Story doesn't move the ball. That's the key to the whole game in offensively. Move the ball or move runners. It's that simple. And the Cardinals haven't done it since Whitey Herzog. And that's why I'm not a fan of both of those other managers. You've got to move the ball. You've got, as a hitter, you have got to try to get ahead. And as a pitcher, you try to get ahead. The Cardinals don't get ahead as pitchers, and they get behind as hitters too many times to be an effective ball club. And the first thing I would do, there's two things I would do. One is learn the strike zone. You cannot tell me a major league player cannot see spin and the ball is in front of you, way out in front of you, and it's spinning, and it's a ball 10 feet in front of you, 5 feet in front of you, and it's spinning. Where's it going to be when it gets to you? It's even going to be worse. You have got to launch and lay off. Launch and lay off and learn that. And learn when you're going to get a gut shot. And then you got to move it. Too many times when we do get the gut shots, we pop up or foul it straight back or don't even swing at it. And on my thoughts here, that pitcher has got to get ahead. And our young guys who did a great job, they did a great job. But I'm not going to say great. They did a very good job. But like Jim said, they might have got a little weary. And they've got AAA mindsets. They haven't been in the big show. They haven't been like a Gibson and been under the gun and those type of pitchers. Lester, those guys have been under it, and they know how to pitch out of it. And our guys, when they did miss or didn't get a call, like Wainwright's his last outing, he pitched a lot better than what it reflected because he didn't get some borderline calls. He gets those borderline calls, the whole thing turns around. And the outing before that, he didn't get any borderline calls, and they dumped a couple of singles. And we made one bad play in that outing when they got three runs and two errors. We made two errors, one play that didn't get made, it should have been an error, and two dump hits and about four borderline calls that didn't go his way. Consequently, three runs scored.
Well, listen, you make an unbelievable amount of points. There's a lot of the new age fan that would say, you're out of touch. Bunting is bad. You don't bunt. You don't give up outs. Not in this league. You don't give yourself up. I've always said I find it odd that we don't want to move a runner over when a guy at the plate's gets a hit 25% of the time. So you're not going to move a runner into scoring position? I get it. You can show me numbers and you can do all that kind of stuff, but you still have to play the game. And you have to understand what's going on in the game at that moment. Numbers are very broad-stroked.
Very good point, and you're exactly right again, Jim. You've got to know what's going on, what counts, whatever. But you think I'm a big bunter, and I am. Of course, I coached high school. They don't have the arms like they do in the pros. But still, you put the situation in your good hitter's hands. So you bunt the number two guy to get, and I got 3-4 to get him in. 3-4 to get him in. That's what they're getting paid, $300 million for.
That's true.
Is to 3-4. So you put the game, no matter what inning, you put the game to play for one run, and any run per inning and any runs you get above that is gravy. But you play for one run and you put it into somebody's hands, that's good. Would you rather have Molina up or DeJean? It just depends. I'm going to play the game to get Molina to be in the hitting position rather than a DeJean who's kind of a rookie.
All right, good stuff. Well, hey, listen, going to invite in a friend of mine now that I think you're going to enjoy. He's going to tell us a little bit about the second part of my theory with Alex Reyes, and I wanted to bring this cat up, but I thought I'd wait for Kyle Reese because he's going to be able to tell us a little bit more about it as he brings some of his insight, as you always hear him, with his prospects after dark and his association with his friends with Birds on the Black. Just a tremendous guy with tremendous information. Let's hear what he has for us. Hey, Kyle, what do you say, bud?
Not a whole lot, brother. How are you?
Well, I got a question for you. On Monday's show, I know you listened in and heard me ask the question. I'm going to ask you the question. I want to get the first thoughts that come out of your mouth when I ask you, would Alex Reyes have made a difference?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Anytime you add anyone that talented, they're going to make a huge difference. Even if he would have played a role in the bullpen as opposed to being a starter. But absolutely. The ramifications where I get interested in what I was thinking of when you asked the question, you were going over it on Monday. I think about like what that would have meant for Dakota Hudson eventually coming up to the majors, or Daniel Ponce de Leon eventually coming up to the majors, like how that would have changed their time frame. You know, maybe you get Daniel Ponce de Leon a little later. He never starts. He only pitches out of relief and ends up playing, pitching an important role out of the bullpen while Alex Reyes is in the rotation, or, you know, maybe they flip that or something. Anyways, there's no denying with someone as immensely talented as Alex Reyes that he would have made a difference. And if the difference would have got them into the wild card, if it would have got them division, that's speculation that I don't really feel comfortable. Like, I don't know well enough, but I do think that, I mean, you're talking about a potential for two wins, and especially with the way that the bullpen kind of faltered at the end, if you would have had him there as the stopper with Carlos Martinez as the save artist, as the closer, that would have changed. I have a personal belief that the Cardinals, like, downfall in September, other than the bats going cold, seemed to coincide with Carlos Martinez being moved to the closer role away from the fireman role. And they just didn't have anyone to fill that role. He kept going to Hudson and it didn't work. John Brebbia, they started using it was too late. But if you could have even had Alex Reyes for that role, that would have been a huge difference, especially going down the September stretch.
Yeah, that was the whole premise behind Monday. It wasn't so much, you know, would Alex Reyes have won 10 games or 15 games or whatever it was. There was somebody else in that role, and I get the whole war thing and who's above, whatever. But, you know, my thing is this, and I've said it 100 times, it was about the dominoes that were affected by that. We stuck with Luke Weaver quite a while because I'm not quite sure what the options were. You know, I mean, we lost Reyes, we lost Wainwright, whatever your feelings are about Wainwright. But we lost them, and now you're in a situation where, holy cow, I had this plan, and I had a plan until I got punched in the face, and now I got to readjust, right? So now we're adjusting on the fly. We're making all these moves. Some things started working, and we had a nice run. But, listen, I you don't have to look any further than last night's game. For about, I don't know, 3 or 4 months, Adam Ottavino was the best relief pitcher in baseball. And they just used him and used him and used him. And now, you know, he hasn't been great the last month. And last night, you saw again, he didn't have that devastating slider that he had the first 4 months of the season. I think people think, oh, put him in the bullpen, it's easier on him, and they control. That is not true. I don't know why people think that. It is not true. It is easier. To control a guy as a starter. He gets his normal rest. He throws his bullpens. It is not easier to put a guy in the bullpen. So stop thinking that. It's a very stressful role, both mentally and physically. That brings me into the next part, though. I have mentioned on the show numerous times, I brought up at the beginning, that I every year am privileged to attend a very intimate dinner for SLU baseball as a kickoff thing. He has great guests every year that give you insight into what they do and inside Major League Baseball. Some of them are guys that tell unbelievable stories and things you would never hear. This year it was Mo, and at this meeting, at this little dinner, Mo had mentioned, because people were talking to him, that they were concerned about the closer role. He had mentioned two names that he felt in the second half of the season we might see in that role. They were two names. Jordan Hicks was one of them, who we all know made the team out of spring training and not at the All-Star break like they were thinking. The second name was Ryan Helsley. Ryan Helsley, he said, because Mo was kind of like, I could see a situation where both these guys are pitching in the back end of games for us the second half of next year. Well, Ryan Helsley, on top of Jordan Hicks, they, you know, and then what they do is they stretch these guys out a little bit as starters. They don't abuse them, but they just make sure they get their innings in. Well, he was rolling. I mean, basically doing everything they had said this guy would do. And then he gets an injury. So I believe that a guy that most fans don't even know who he is or have heard of also played a major role in the bullpen not being able to sustain after the changes because we didn't have the opportunity to call him up. So my question is this. Tell us, well, not a question, my task to you is, tell us a little bit about who Ryan Helsley is, because after learning about him from Mo, I followed him closely, and boy, he seemed to be awfully good.
Yeah, you're asking the right person about Ryan Helsley. So when the Cardinals drafted Ryan Helsley, I fell in love with him. I don't know how else to put it. It seems to fit my personality, being goofy, but I've been Ryan Helsley's biggest advocate in the scouting world, if you even want to call it that. I'm bigger on him than anyone, and it's a shame that he had the shoulder fatigue that ended his season on June 9th or 10th. But he just pitches. He was unheralded at first. He threw like a low 90s of a top out and like mid 90s fastball. His curveball seemed to kind of float a little bit. His changeup didn't do much, and people didn't think it would ever like come together, but it did. And all of a sudden, he'd start a game throwing 94 miles an hour, and then he'd finish the game in the sixth inning throwing 97, 98. He's one of those type pitchers. His fastball is electric. They say it has the highest spin rate in the organization when he's healthy. His curveball is probably his most underrated pitch, and I don't know if anyone knows exactly how good it is. When you watch it, it seems superb. And the way that it plays with the high fastball where he can drop his curveball in low, it just – all of his pitches now, he throws a cutter, a changeup, a fastball, and that curveball. And all four of those pitches really, really work well together. Now, I wouldn't necessarily say there are any of them. Well, the fastball's well above average. The curveball, I believe, is above average. And his changeup cutter can both profile as average. When he's healthy, he definitely would have played a role in some capacity in either the rotation or as a reliever. I know that Mo says, you know, maybe he would have a chance to fill important relief innings, but he's been a very effective starting pitcher, you know, pitching six innings. For like two straight years, he had the highest game score, like a cumulative game score in the organization. He's really solid. He's 6'2". He has kind of a quirky motion where he keeps his hands away from his body and takes a somewhat exaggerated step with his left leg as he brings it up. And then winds all the way around to get to the plate, and that helps his stuff as well. But if he's healthy, then yeah, I would. And the Cardinals have to add him to the 40-man to protect him from the Rule 5 draft. But if he's healthy, I would expect him to have a chance of breaking with the big club next year. Now, with him being injured and missing a couple months of the season, what the Cardinals have done with guys like Junior Fernandez in particular, Arian Gonzalez, they're immediately transitioning those guys to bullpen roles when they get healthy. So there's precedent to think that he would be moved to the bullpen, and there's precedent to think that he would break with the big club next year if he's healthy.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people, and I'll let you finish this last question. I know typically we count on you for minor league talk, but I'm going to get your opinion because I'm going to get Coach's opinion. I'll start with Coach, and then I'll let you go last as you leave here, Kyle.
Cool.
I get a lot of people that are like, man, I really like Carlos Martinez in that closer role. And I'm like, I don't know what to say because I'm kind of perplexed at that, because here's a guy that I think is a starter we all think has – I mean, number one, I think we all think he has number one stuff. I think there's a lot of people that believe, you know, if he can make changes within his own game, admittedly, you know, he could be a Cy Young type stuff guy. Would you, Coach, I'll start with you. Do you take a guy like that with that type of talent in a starting role and utilize him as a closer, or do you go outside and say, no way, this guy has shown he can be a top starter in the big leagues, and that's the hardest job there is?
Well, what you do, you play your best. If it's center field, you play your best one you got available. Same way with pitching. We tried Norris, and he did a very credible job. Excellent. But then, all of a sudden, he lost it. And you don't have any confidence in him. And rightfully so. So, to me, he made a great move in putting Martinez there. The other thing I noticed about Martinez is that when he came up with adversity and that stress, he overcame it and pitched well. But I want to mention one thing about the pitching. Wasn't there a guy named Gregerson that was supposed to be in that close, one of the potential closing roles, or at least a 6th, 7th, 8th inning guy, which I don't love anyway. I don't like that 6th, 7th, 8th business. But anyway, back to it, you lost Walker, another guy you lost. So you lost Wainwright, you lost Martinez, you lost Walker, you lost those other two guys. I mean, come on. We were flawed at the very beginning because of the injuries. Now, everybody has them. And you got to find somebody. And that gets back to my last point, evaluation. You've got to know how to evaluate talent. And I think we lack in that the last decade.
Your thoughts on Carlos Martinez's closer. Now, I think where I like where Coach went with that, but I think my ultimate question is, so Coach, I'll give you one last chance to answer. My ultimate question is, would you leave Carlos Martinez in the closer role, or do you bring him back next year as a starter?
If I get somebody better, I just said it, I put my best at the closer. If I get somebody better than him, I put him back as a starter where I think he can be effective. He needs to mature, which he's done. He's gotten better and better. But if he gets the maturity, this guy, you're right, he's got great stuff. But to answer your question, you got somebody better, then go to him. If not, go with Martinez, because Whitey Herzog said it best. Without my number one pick is a closer. My number one guy I'm going to go after is a closer. And when he lost Sutter, he said, I just lost 45 more games.
Your thoughts, Kyle?
Yeah, you know, my thought is the beautiful thing about Carlos Martinez is that even when he's not good as a starting pitcher, he's better than your average number three or number four. And it's hard for me to give up on that as a starting pitcher in 6 innings every 5 days, you know, 5 1/3 innings at the very least every 5 days. I think the most important thing, though, is we're lucky it's a decision we don't have to make today. I know that if you take him out of the starting rotation, you need somebody to replace him that is as good as he is or better than he is. And that's rare. And the Cardinals generally don't trade for that player. They don't sign that player. So, and, you know, that goes to the coach's part about player evaluation.
Go ahead. No. Sorry. Go ahead. Finish.
I'm just saying that there's no way in hell that I move him out of the starting rotation unless I had an option that I was 100% sure was better. And the most important thing in all this, other than not having to make that decision, is that they'll have, even if Wainwright doesn't come back, 10 guys that'll go to spring training prepared to start. And they'll be able to make their decision from there. You know, it goes back to the Alex Reyes, Ryan Helsley thing. You know, if Alex Reyes is healthy, then that helps you decide exactly what you want to do with Carlos Martinez one way or the other. And I don't know. The way I look at it simply is if he goes into the season as the closer, that limits what you can do long term. If he goes into the season as a starter, then you can always transition him back to a relief role.
Yeah, it's a tough thing. I'm with you in the fact that I think it's a really tough thing, only because I look at it and I say, I know how hard it is. I mean, all relievers are guys that couldn't start. That's what they are. I mean, your best pitcher, any coach will tell you, your starter is your best pitcher, or he wouldn't be your starter. It's a fact. There's a reason that these guys are starters. Very few guys go into this wanting to be a reliever. They all want to start. And again, there's a variety of reasons why guys are moved into relief roles. They don't have the pitches to start. They don't have the ability to do what now everybody talks about. The great starters can go through the lineup three times occasionally. You know, a lot of these guys can't do it. Well, let me tell you something. If you live in a world, and this is what people need to think about, that's all I hear is he can't get through the lineup the third time. Okay? Well, now, do the math. If unless the guy throws a perfect game, he's not pitching six innings then. If you're going to take every guy out before he hits the third. So then what does that do? That taxes your bullpen. We have caused problems. We want to live in a world now where a starting pitcher is praised if he goes five innings. But then we wonder why the bullpens break down. People are wrong. The bullpen is not a place to go and take it easy. It is a stressful environment mentally, but it's extremely stressful physically. I don't think people understand that you can't throw off a mound every day. You just can't. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. But I know enough to know you can't do it. It just doesn't happen. When I see these little league parents throw these kids back-to-back days, I want to go grab them and shake them and go, what are you doing? What are you doing? The greatest athletes in the world don't throw two innings every day. They don't. They throw an inning, and then they take days off. I don't understand it. It blows my mind. But this instance right here, I'm going to have a hard time taking Carlos Martinez out of that starting rotation for a variety of reasons. Number one, Luke Weaver showed us this year that you can't count your chickens, okay, before they're hatched, because, you know, there are very few people out there are going to tell me they didn't think Luke Weaver was going to be all that in a bag of chips this last year, right? I mean, I'm sorry. Now, listen, I didn't even like him that much. I've said on the show that I thought he was a 4A pitcher, and people thought I was nuts. Oh, did you see what he did this year? And I said, listen, I'm just telling you what I see. Okay, now I'm not here to go, oh, I was right, because I hope I'm not right. I hope he comes back next year and is great. My point was, I didn't think he was like, yeah, I saw a guy that won some games and pitched well, but I'm like, I don't know that this guy looks to me. He doesn't look to me like what other guys look like that carry the water. Okay, so I didn't like him. But whatever, I always hope I'm wrong. Okay, I'm telling you right now, Carlos Martinez can carry the water. You're going to tell me you got five guys lined up that are ready to start every 5 days in the big leagues and actually give you a real chance of winning? If you got that, if you really feel you got that, both by your eye test and your stat test, well, then fine. Leave Carlos Martinez as closer. But if it's me, and I'll foreshadow a little bit, I'm going to go find out what Craig Kimbrell runs, because I got money. And if I'm not going to sign Machado or Harper, I got a whole lot of money. I'm going to go find out what Craig Kimbrell wants, and I'm going to give it to him. And I'm going to say, Carlos, why don't you go back into the starting rotation, and you and Mr. Flaherty and hopefully a healthy Michael Wacha and hopefully a healthy Alex Reyes, and we're going to let everybody else fight, and Michaelis, we're going to go ahead and roll in the next season like that. And now we've shown that we got a couple other guys in that bullpen, and we're going to put Mr. Kimbrell back there in the ninth, and we'll go from there. That's what I'm doing. So I don't know. That's my plan. I don't know if Mo's listening, but we'll find out.
Hey, Jim, I want to throw something in here. A relief pitcher, the best ones and the great ones, had a pitch. Sutter had the split finger, and your guy Riviera, he had one pitch. He threw one pitch, but he located it high, medium, low. He could locate that one pitch, and he's one of the greatest relievers of all time. You have to get a guy that gets the pitch that has a ground ball. And Martinez is more of a starter. He just got good stuff, and he was successful there for a couple of weeks. But I think, you know, I agree with you. You got to have your starters first, and Martinez should be there. But get you a closer that's got good stuff. You took Raleigh Fingers. He was a starter and successful, but then he became a reliever, but he had one pitch, that sinker or fork ball or whatever you want to call it, palm ball. I don't care what you call it. It's got to go down, and you got to locate. And there's the other problem, location, location, location. There's three things you need in pitching. Location, location, location.
Seems awful simple to me. Well, hey, Kyle, I know you got to get out of here. Tell our listeners where they can find you.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at KYLER416. I write for Birds on the Black, and we'll be doing it looks like we're going to do Prospects After Dark in the off season every Tuesday. That's a Periscope show that'll be at 8:30 Central Time. We're going to do it every Tuesday, but the plan is as news breaks or something intriguing happening, we'll be popping up here and there. So that's where you'll be able to find me.
Well, I appreciate you, my friend. I look forward to chatting with you next week. And I would say go whoever plays the Cubs, but they're out. So now it's just let's enjoy baseball. Take care, my friend.
Yeah, we'll talk to you later.
All right. That is Kyle Reese, our Prospects After Dark, who turns into Prospects for Lunch. Great stuff from him, as I knew we could count on him for some Ryan Helsley information. It's time now to take it on over to my good friend and yours, Moe's Algorithm, for some real bow ties and sweaters. What's going on, Moe's?
Nothing. How you doing, Jim?
Good. I can tell by the email you sent me last night that our listeners are going to be excited to hear what you have for us today, because it's time. You know, listen, as a Cardinal fan, I think we have to look at this season as, okay, it sucks, we're out. Okay, what's our next agenda? All right, for most Cardinal fans, before we could move on to what do we do now, I think all of our effort and all of our fandom was focused on getting the Cubs out. And now that the Cubs are out, we can move forward. It's your duty as a Cardinal fan to want the Cubs to not do well. We've done it. We have put them down. It is now time to think about 2019. So you sent me an interesting email last night that goes right along with this thought process. Let's get started. Very first thing you mentioned here, the projected payroll for 2019 as of today is?
So it's 104.9. This is going off Baseball Reference. Some people are using some other sites. So just for reference, I'm using Baseball Reference. It's 104.9 million. So that does not include arbitration raises or stuff like that. When you throw in the projected
arbitration. Hey, Moe's, I'm going to stop you. Moe's, I'm going to stop you. We lost you for a second there. All right, start one more time. With what is the projected payroll again?
So pre-arbitration, so guaranteed contracts, it's $104.9 million.
Okay. And do they have a guess for post-arbitration?
Yep. It's sitting at $31.4 million. And then you also have raises to those guys who are not arbitration eligible. Some of those guys like Jack Flaherty and stuff will get a slight bump. And they're projecting that at $6.05 million, which gets you to a grand total of $142.3 million projected payroll going into free agency.
Okay, so guys like me who are sitting here going, okay, well, no Waino at $19 million. No,
yep.
I can't remember no Norris at, what was he, $3 million?
Yep.
No, God, I can't think of the other guy that I had on my mind that was going to be gone. But I'm sitting here going,
Tyson Ross.
Yeah, just a few other guys. I was thinking right along the lines that just eliminating those guys alone would get us on the path to add a little more money and sign a big guy. It doesn't seem that I'm correct, and a lot of that is due to raises. So
yeah.
So let's talk about some of the reasoning why my theory is not holding water today. It looks like, to be quite honest, dead money, which you refer to here, that kind of rolls along with Dexter's contract. Why don't you tell us about those?
So Dexter is owed $49.5 million over the next 3 years. It's $16.5 million each year. That's really, if you look at it, I mean, you really can't call that dead money yet because he's still playing. It's not like he has a permanent injury like David Wright. So who knows what Dexter Fowler can do next year. So that's how good the Cardinals are sitting. The only true dead money they're sitting on is the $5 million next year that they'll pay to Seattle for Mike Leake. And that actually is countered by the $5 million they'll get for Jed Jerko from San Diego. So if you look at the Cardinals and the way they're sitting right now, There is no true dead money because they're going to get $5 million for Jed. They're given $5 million for Leak, so that cancels that out. And Dexter Fowler is still an active player who can probably participate next year.
So in studio, just letting you know, I have legendary high school baseball coach from the area, Tom Pyle. He leans over to me while you're talking and says, you know, basically referring to there is some dead money on this roster because, in his opinion, guys that shouldn't be on the roster to him are dead money. So right off the bat, he mentions a guy like Cecil. And I'm going to tell you that that's where I sit too. There are certain guys taking salary from this team that seem like dead money to me. One would be Cecil. I'm sorry. One would be Gregerson. I'm not even going to get into Fowler. I think we would all feel better if his salary was not a part of this team. I don't know how realistic it is to go anywhere, but there is, in my opinion, I don't know what the salaries are. I don't have them in front of me, but if you add Cecil's money with Gregerson's money, there's two guys right there that I don't see any place on this team for them. Do we own him this year?
Yeah, he's part of the, there's a group of players I have listed here that are arbitration eligible, and he's one of them.
And I wouldn't offer him arbitration. I don't know about you. He's awful.
I have him listed as a non-tender candidate on my list of guys arbitration eligible.
Okay. I don't want him. I don't want Tyler Webb. I don't want, is Tyson Ross on your thing, or is he a free agent?
Tyson Ross is an unrestricted free agent, so he is able to sign wherever he wants to.
Okay, because I mean, I know a lot of people liked him, but he's just a guy to me. I'll say this: if he's on your team, I don't know where the improvements. I mean, again, he did a fine job in relief for the Cardinals. You want to bring him back in a long relief role? That's fine. I don't know that Tyson Ross is going to want to do that. I'm sure some low market team would be happy to have him as a fourth or fifth starter. So,
probably.
I don't see him coming back. So that's dead money to me. The Brett Cecils, the Gregersons, the Shreves, Greg Garcia is dead money to me. I know you have to have a guy like that, but I would prefer Jaro Munoz in that role.
So Greg Garcia, I have listed also as a non-tender candidate. He's arbitration eligible. So I have him listed as a non-tender candidate.
So let me ask you this question. The guys that we're mentioning as possible quote-unquote non-tender candidates, those contracts, though, are figured in the projections that you gave us earlier because they're somebody else's projections, correct?
Yeah, that money could go down.
Okay.
And I would say, honestly, I would see them. I do see them parting ways with Cecil this winter. I don't see them parting ways with Gregerson. I think they'll give him a shot in spring training to prove he's healthy. But I think they will be done with Cecil, and that will be $15 million in dead money.
I believe you, and I think they will do that with Gregerson. I don't think it's that much money for a guy that could possibly pitch the seventh inning for you. So if they go that route and they make other improvements, I won't balk at that. I balked when they said he was going to be the closer. I mean, that's when I balked.
Definitely.
Financial flexibility for free agents. So where, in your opinion, does this leave us to make some changes? A pipe dream for me, and I know Coach wants to jump in here on the free agent thing, but I'm going to start and say I'm going to say it again. I'm going to bite again and say, if they've ever needed to go out and overextend themselves, it's now, and it's with Manny Machado. And I've said it once, and I'll say it again. I'm going to call him up, and I'm going to say, whatever offer you get, you come on back here. And I'm going to beat it, and I'm going to make him tell us no. It's that simple. If the Dodgers offer him $300 million, I'm going to offer him $310. If the Yankees offer him $350, I'm going to offer him $360. Whatever it is, I'm going to make him say no. And he might, and that's fine. But there is no way I'm going to finish second in the bidding. It's that simple.
Yeah.
It's not just winning. They have a problem, and I think they know it. Okay? They are 2 years away from the only identifiable player they have with fans retiring. They have a problem.
Yep.
Okay, I'm sorry. I know people like Paul DeJong. He's nowhere near being that guy yet. Not even remotely close. And while I think it's a loud minority, there's a lot of people that don't like Matt Carpenter. Okay, for a variety of reasons. There's a lot of people that don't like. You need a guy that everybody loves. You got to have a guy that they love him even when he's not great. Okay, they don't have it in 2 years, I promise you. Not right now, not on this roster. They don't. Okay? Now, let's just get that aside, because that signing, in my opinion, should have nothing to do with fixing the problems. There is no way I go into this season and I don't find out what Craig Kimbrell wants. That's my opinion. So I'll let you chat, and then I want to get Coach Pyle's thoughts on free agents.
Sure, absolutely. So let's just go off the projected, right? We'll assume that they tender contracts to guys like Garcia and whatever. So we're at 142.3. The approximation of what they spent last year in 2018 was $162 million. So if they only want to spend what they spent in 2018, which I don't think they will. I think they'll increase payroll again. But you're sitting at $20 million. So if Bill DeWitt says, you know, Mo, you are not allowed to spend a dime over what we spent in 2018, well, he's going to have to get very creative. Because he's only got about $20 million of freed up money. I think they'll increase payroll. I think the luxury tax limit is $206 million. So they got a long way to go before they have to worry about that. I personally am in the Bryce Harper camp. I think he fits the team slightly better than Machado, slightly, very slightly. And I think he'll cost a little bit less than Machado. But other than that, that's kind of where they sit for 2019, about $20 million, unless they choose to increase payroll. And I also I just want to throw this in there because I'm in the Bryce Harper camp. That does not mean that they have to trade Dexter Fowler. Like, look at how long the Yankees sat on Jacoby Ellsbury on their bench. You know, look at other guys that have sat around that are making money, and they just sit on the bench. You know, you don't have to cut him. He still could be useful. You never know when Marcelo Zuno could pop an ACL in spring training. You don't know when Bryce Harper could pull a groin muscle. You know, it's not like you just have to dump Dexter Fowler just because he makes money. So I think they'll look into ways to trading him. I think they'll have to eat a lot of money to do it. But I also think they can get creative, and this is just kind of it's an island I'm kind of sitting on right now. You know, Arizona's in pretty rough financial shape, and Zach Greinke would look really good in this rotation. And if there's a way to take on his contract and get rid of the Dex contract, you know, I think they can creative in some of those aspects. So those are just a few of my ideas for this winter. Probably none of it will come true, but that's just kind of where I'm sitting right now.
Coach, you want to chime in on some free agent stuff?
Well, it comes down to evaluation. We've made some very poor evaluations. Fowler should never have been signed in the first place. The reason I think they did that, they're mad because Hayworth went to the Cubs. Well, we'll show you, well, then we'll get your outfielder. I think that was part of it. And you paid him way too much money. My God. Yeah, the guy can't, you know, he can do a few things, but only a few, and he's not very good at that. So that was a bad sign. Cecil, a bad sign. The guy, what's his name, Howland? Who was that other guy?
Greg Holland.
Very poor sign and a little unlucky, because Cecil had a good year the year before we signed him, and Greg Holland had a good year before we signed him. But here's what I would do. I'd get rid of Carpenter because he's still got some value with his 36 home runs. Send him to the American League where he can DH. He cannot play defense that well, not at the major league level anyway. And send him down and get you another a shortstop or a first baseman, whoever you can get, except $300 million. Although I love to have him. I think he's the best shortstop. But get a shortstop and a first baseman that can play. And I love Martinez's hitting. I love his attitude, you know, because he's kind of a free spirit. But you got to trade him and get to American League again. Boy, they would kill for a guy who could hit that good. And get you a first baseman that can hit and can play. The first baseman has to have a little power. The shortstop doesn't need, he could be an Ozzie Smith type, hit a good solid, you know, 280, 290, but play the D. So those two things have to be addressed. You got some guys to get rid of. And like Jim said, we've got nobody that we love except Molina. He's the only guy we love. And getting back to all that, if we knew now what a ball player costs per year, we would have kept Pujols. And you could have signed Pujols if you would have negotiated with him a year and a half before you did, because when we negotiated for Holiday, I think it's an ego thing. Pujols was upset. Redo my contract and I'll stay. All that could have been avoided if we would have evaluated somebody's emotions, ego, and whatever, and we would still had him. Because his wife, 1 week after he went to L.A., told a cameraman in St. Louis that Albert misses St. Louis. He loves St. Louis, and he wanted to remain a Cardinal till the very end. So you could have got him if you knew what you're doing, and you'd not only sign him for ability, but their emotions and what they can do and how they feel. It's all part of it.
Well, again, I look at it for, you know, for what it is. Holland was the other guy I was thinking about, Mose, when I started adding up money. I mean, we gave him, I believe, was it $14 million? I took his $14 million. I took Wainwright's money, and I took God, now I've lost the other guy that I knew was gone. And I added all that together. I said, well, there's your yearly salary right there for a stud. So who knows? I mean, I know I'm just pipe dreaming here, but the reality of it is this. I mentioned earlier, we don't have guys that carry the water. We got complimentary guys. That is not going to compete in this league, okay? Listen, the teams that are really good, they have multiple players that would bat third or fourth for us, not batting third or fourth for their teams, okay? End of discussion. End of discussion, you know? And I'm sorry, but it's got to get better. And if it doesn't get better, I've said it once, I'll say it again. They may very well have sold 3-point-whatever-million tickets over there, but the turnstiles weren't close. And that costs them money. I'm sorry, but it does. Now, their financial health is not in question. So people can say, until their financial health is in question, it ain't going to matter. But I will also back it up with this. They spent $162 million this year. That's a lot of money. It obviously, as Coach was saying, was poorly spent. So now that's got to get fixed. And ultimately, and I'm sorry, somebody better get held accountable for the way you spend $162 million and can't make the playoffs again.
Hey, Jim, I'm going to interject something. You said I'd pay $300 million for Machado or $310 or whatever. I'm going to disagree with you there. Here's what I would pay extra for and hire him. I don't care what they cost. Whatever they're offering, I'm going to give them $2 million more. And that is Theo Epstein from the Cubs, get him down here. He only won a World Series with Boston.
He's not going to win one with this ownership group, though.
Okay.
There's no open checkbook here to make mistakes and write them away. And that's not the situation with this ownership group. Well, people got to stop. I'm sorry, Coach. You got to call an apple here.
All right, then I want to go down there. I agree. You got to spend some bucks. But the thing of it is, get you a guy that can evaluate.
Well,
my golly.
Go.
Or get that guy that we sent down to Houston. That was, what's his name?
Lunau. I mean,
Lunau.
We'll see what he does.
See what he does.
Oh,
they won the World Series last year. That's what he did.
All right.
Come on. He took.
Mozeliak won a World Series.
Who?
Mozeliak won a World Series, too. Mozeliak's won a World Series.
But the talent level has gone consistently down since then. Was that Mose, or was that an afterthought of some of the players came before Mo? I don't know.
Well, I can tell you that in Houston, the only guy that he's really responsible for is Correa. And was it Correa? And I got to be quite honest with you, the whole world would have drafted him with the pick they had. He may have picked Bergman. Did he pick Bergman, I mean?
He picked Bergman, but you also got to think he also chose Mark Appel over Chris Bryant.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, he's done. Listen, he ain't no different than any other GM in this league, okay? Listen, let's talk about the
results. I go with the results.
Well, what about the Cardinals? They want to tank for multiple years and get high draft picks, don't spend any money, build up this coffer of money, and bring a guy in here and say, here's an unlimited checkbook? I would think things would be different, too. And I'm not absolving Mo from issue here. I'm just saying that, again, to be quite frank, I'm going both ways here. I'm saying that the ownership group has spent money. It's how we're spending it.
That's it. You're right. Because you don't give that kind of money to those pitchers unless you're willing to spend a buck or two. But the thing of it is, you have got to do a better job of evaluating. I don't care if it's Mo, Schmo, or Curly. Just give me a guy that can evaluate and give me some players in here that can play defense, offense, run the bases a little bit, and know the fundamentals of baseball. That's all I want. Bring in Curley.
Yeah, I hear you. Good stuff. Well, hey, Mose, I know you got to run. Thanks for the time today. Tell our listeners what social media platforms they can find you at if they want to follow you.
On Facebook at Mose Algorithm and on Twitter at Mose_algorithm, M-O-Z.
Well, my friend, I appreciate you. I look forward to what you have for us next week. I know we're going to have to get through some playoff baseball before we really get into some hot stove league, but I know this offseason we're going to start asking you to evaluate some targets and the underlying numbers, and we're going to put them together with what we see from the eye test. So I appreciate you very much, and I'll chat with you soon.
All right. See you, Jim.
All righty. That is Mo's Algorithm. Again, we ask that you follow him and get engaged in the conversation. Another guy that you guys love to follow and get his takes is our good friend, Brendan Schaefer. Let's see what he has for us today. What's going on, Brendan?
Not too much. How are we doing today?
Well, last week we talked about it. I was hoping we would be evaluating a Cardinal playoff series, but instead it looks like we're going to get back on the topic of where did all go wrong. I know throughout the season, obviously you write about the Cardinals. You engage with a lot of listeners, a lot of social media followers, and everybody's got a different opinion. I'm curious to get your opinion on where it all went wrong.
Well, you know, I don't know if this is the common opinion, but I just get struck by the times when it seems like the lineup falls apart and doesn't bring anything to the table in the games that they need it most. You look at the course of the season, the starting pitching on a whole was good. Obviously, it sputtered at the end, but that was kind of to be expected with some of the young guys they had to rely on at that time. But I just look at, you know, the guys like Matt Carpenter, who might have been the team's best hitter for the season, has a terrible September, and just the timing of some of those slumps. I don't know that there's any way you can fix that in developing this team for next season and then trying to add somebody in free agency or the trade market. But to me, it's just the timing of when the offense decides to disappear that is so brutal for this team. They needed a couple more wins down the stretch. They were close in a lot of games. In a lot of those games, they were close. They just didn't score enough runs to support their pitching staff. And so that's really – it might not be fair because on the season they were middle of the pack and runs scored. It's not like they were a terrible offensive team. But that's really what sticks with me. It's just the games that you're losing 2-1 or 3-2 that you definitely wish you had back.
You know, I look at the team, and you bring up the offense, so I'm going to bring up something that I've kind of been harping on today, and that's this. You know, I look at guys that have decent on-base percentages, but they can't hit. And sooner or later, I've said this, you got to be able to hit. And I just don't understand where the disconnect is there, that sooner or later you got – people act – I understand the whole premise of, well, driving in runs is all about the guys that get on in front of you, and then you get the opportunity to drive them in. Everybody acts like just anybody can bat in those spots and drive those runners in. That is just not true. It's just not true. Just like anybody can pitch in the ninth inning, it's just not true. Certain guys thrive in certain situations. Certain guys live for certain situations. I see it at every level. It only stands to reason that it happens at the major league level. I don't understand why we feel like it's a foregone conclusion that just anybody can bat third, can bat fourth, can lead off. It blows my mind. Coach, I know you want to jump in here. Go ahead. You're chomping at the bit here.
Well, yeah, and you just can't play second base. We put three different guys at second base. We put four different guys in right field. We have two or three guys play shortstop. We have three guys play first base. And you might play first base today, third base tomorrow, and second base the next day. You cannot continually do it. You could do it once in a while, but not as much as the Cardinals. And I agree with both of you guys what you said. And the third thing that killed us, mid-relief. Mid-relief, if you look it up, was horrendous considering we only lost out by two games. Jesus, every time we'd have a lead or take a lead or come back and take a lead, the next inning, one run, two run by the mid-relief, and the next guy, one run, two runs. So it was horrific, at least the second half.
Brendan, I got to tell you, if you were going to – focus on one area on this team. And I don't know. See, that's my problem. I don't know that they can just focus on one area. But if you were going to focus on one area to improve this offseason, what would it be?
I'm adding to the offense. I'm doing something to fix the lineup. And, you know, even the Cubs, who have a lot of big names, were among the league leaders in games that they scored one or fewer runs. And that's, you know, it doesn't stand to reason. And so it's not just the Cardinals that have these issues, you know, getting runs together on a consistent basis. But I just think that you have to try to get to identify those players that you're talking about that can hit in the certain roles that you need to fill, and bring one of them in and allocate resources to do so. Because, you know, I think that's a big need. Bullpen is obviously a big need, but the situation there is they've tried to address the bullpen. They thought they were addressing the bullpen when they gave a bunch of money to Brett Cecil. I don't know that I want to see them go sign a Zach Britton or one of these high-profile relievers that you're going to need to give $40, $50 million to and see that go down the drain as well. I'd rather allocate that money, if it's going to be spent, toward a hitter, and try to figure out a different way. Maybe trade resources is the way to address the bullpen. I just don't know if throwing money at the bullpen is going to work, because in the past they haven't been able to identify the guys they want to spend money on. They're very hesitant to do so, but it seems like in recent years when they've done so, it hasn't panned out.
Well, Brian, I agree with you. I don't want to throw money at the mid relief. I want to get my best starter, or not my best starter, one of my best players, and teach him an out pitch, a great pitch. And then you don't have to spend money. Use one of those guys and just make him better and teach him a great pitch like they did Riviera. Now, secondly, I agree with you 100%. We got to go out and spend some money, and no matter what it takes, if you want to compete or keep going down the level, you've got to get a number three hitter, and we can live with four and maybe a five guy. Get a first baseman that can play and a shortstop. That is key. And if you have to get rid of Carpenter and Martinez, arguably our two best hitters, then you've got to do it. Because you got every game that they help win, they also help lose. Not catching a fly ball in right field, make it in there. Can't catch a big high bouncer coming across to first base. Stuff like that it killed us game after game after game. So go out and get the player. But I disagree with the hitting 100%. See, I used to do that as a high school coach. Boy, if he can hit, he's playing. I don't care where. But, my God, we're losing games by defense. 5 errors a game at my first few years of coaching. Of course, we played on a cow pasture. So I changed my philosophy. I want a hitter, sure. But you got to have defense to win baseball games and pitching. And then you can fill in with some hitters. But look at the Dodgers. Look what the Dodgers did, how they won it for years. Look at the Cardinals. My God, they got a bunch of no-names back when Whitey, but he had some stud pitchers, not name-wise, just stud guys mentally and with the arm, and could compete. And he stole bases. Of course, I know it was the AstroTurf, but he stole bases. We have a speed, defense, and pitching, and then filled in. He didn't have great players. But you can win with pitching and defense. So pitching first, defense second, and then a hitter. But you got to have some hitting. I agree 100%. And it's got to be somebody that can play, and it's got to be a shortstop and a first baseman.
You know, it's funny. Brennan brought up the bullpen and not wanting to spend the money. And I'm sitting here saying, I'm going to find out what Craig Kimbrell wants, okay, because he's a proven guy to me. Now, that being said, I say that, and then right out of the back side of my mouth, or this other side of my mouth, I say this. Man, the list of relievers last year that all of us were ready to go get, I mean, can you name very many of them that worked out? There's not. I mean,
no.
We wanted Colome. Well, he didn't work out very well last year. He wound up getting traded and became a setup guy in Seattle, and I think he did okay in that role. He wasn't lights out. I haven't been impressed with Zach Britton in with the Yankees. I don't know why everybody just assumes he's going to be some $30 million closer next year. I look at all the guys. Addison Reed wasn't great. Everybody's favorite Juan Nicasio was awful. Just awful.
Take Hicks and make him a pitch.
Wade Davis, I think overall Wade Davis, the cream rises to the top. Wade Davis went through a little patch in Colorado where he struggled, but the cream rises to the top, and as you can see, he has righted his ship. That's where I'm at with Kimbrel. Kimbrel, to me, is a guy that I feel like you can invest money in and feel good about your investment. But, you know, look at all of them. Brian Shaw. Everybody like Brian Shaw.
Brian Shaw.
Awful.
Yep.
Awful. Just awful.
And those are those guys in that $30 million, you know, $20 to $30 million range that you thought, well, we're not getting the top guy, but let's go get the second or third or fourth or fifth guy. I think you might be onto something. If you aren't getting that top guy, that Wade Davis, you might as well try to address it in other ways. Because at least last season, we were mad about certain relievers the Cardinals let go. Those decisions worked out. I can go say I was wrong in many cases on that, because as you said, a lot of those guys did not pan out this season.
Well, I think we'd all say we were wrong. I mean, Benji's going to sit here and go bullpen, bullpen, bullpen. And why is he going to say that? Well, logically, it's been awful for how long now, to be quite frank? So you got to fix it. Well, what's the quickest way to fix something? Throw money at it, right? Instead of develop. And that's what Coach likes to talk about, is develop a guy. Do we have the right guy to develop these minor league guys? I don't know.
I think we do. I think I would take Hicks, who's got a kind of a rubbery arm, can maybe get out there and teach him how to do that and teach him another pitch. This guy's got electric stuff. He throws it 100 mile an hour. Now, that necessarily isn't great, because these professionals can hit 100 mile. You got to have some movement and teach him location, movement, but another pitch. Get out of the hole pitch, a sinker or something, and that would be his number one pitch. But I think you could take Hicks and make him a great closer.
Well, you brought up Mariano Rivera and what made him so great. What made Mariano Rivera great was the cutter. What does the cutter do? The cutter gets off the barrel. The problem with Jordan Hicks this year is, yes, he throws 102 miles an hour, but he hits a lot of barrels. The ball's in on the barrel. It's not in on the hands. It's not off. The best pitch I liked that he threw, I didn't like the hard slider. I liked the soft slider that was 15 miles an hour difference in speed. That's how you get off the barrel. That's what I thought anyway. Now, professional hitters are going to time up 102. They just are. That's the world we live in now.
But do you like Hicks as a closer, possibly?
Oh, yeah. I think because I think you have to assume that this was a great year for – I mean, Brennan, I don't know what you think, but this was a learning year. This guy performed pretty well for what I think most people would say was a grow-up year for him. Would you not agree?
No, I would agree with that. And you know, before the season, when we none of us realized they were going to take him straight from high A and bring him to the major league bullpen, I was still seeing him in spring saying, I'd like to see what he could do, stretched out a little bit more as a starter. But realistically now, when you've got 104 in your back pocket as a potential closer, I'm a little more comfortable now than I would have been at the beginning of the season to say, you can just go ahead and put him on the Trevor Rosenthal plan that he was a starter, but now he's getting groomed as a closer of the future, and maybe that's okay because he's got the electric arm that can fit in that role pretty well. And yeah, there's no way to be disappointed with anything from Jordan Hicks this year. Got to consider the age, got to consider the inexperience. When I do my bullpen grades for the season for KMOV.com, you can expect a pretty favorable grade for Jordan Hicks.
And I would agree, he'd have to get a favorable grade. I think he pitched great. Now, again, did he have some hiccups? God, if you don't think a guy that came straight from A-ball is going to have some hiccups, then your expectations are ridiculous, because it's not an easy job.
Well, I'm just looking at potential, and he to me, he's the right man for it. And if not, maybe you might have to go to Martinez. I don't know. But he's going to have to come up with some different pitches, because he pitches like a starter. Then, if you don't go out and get your $20 million guy or your $25 million guy, then you can put that money at a shortstop or first baseman. And like you said, I don't care what that shortstop costs. I'm not saying you can afford Machado at $300 million. I mean, come on. Then you're not going to get anything ever. But you got to go out and get the best shortstop you can get for the money and offer him the money. St. Louis, people used to want to come here. They loved it. And once they get here, they love it. But now they want to go to the big market, L.A., New York, that type of thing. For some reason, I don't know why. I guess the money and, two, the bright lights. But sure. We got the arch. What more do you want in life?
Yeah, well, What we had here was winning. That's what changed.
That's right.
We had winning. We brought people here. Listen, the Cardinals never really signed a lot of free agents. They went out and got guys, and the guys got here, and they liked it. Now, listen, you can sit here and say, oh, well, yeah, they liked the quote-unquote best fans in baseball and the standing ovations and the fact that you show up on a Monday night and there's 35 to 40,000 people at a game, whereas in other cities you're lucky to get 20, 22. Listen, I believe all that, and I do, think it's important. But let me tell you what they really liked. They like the fact that you got all of that, and you felt like every year the St. Louis Cardinals were going to be in the hunt to win. If you add all that together, then it's a much more attractive situation. But when you come over here and you're like, I don't know that they're going to do what's necessary to win in the playoffs. And I think Mozeliak addressed that exact situation when he talked about why they were willing to extend for Stanton. They got to show these other players that they're willing to do this. In my opinion, a Stanton last year, a Machado or a Harper this year, in my opinion, that money has nothing to do with the budget. That is that's money spent for another plan, because here's the deal. If they went and signed Manny Machado the first day of free agency, the place would go crazy. They'd sell 500,000 jerseys. The lineup would be automatically better. The team would be better. Everybody would still be happy. But guess what? We would still need some help in the bullpen. So if they just signed him and didn't address the bullpen in some way, now, Coach, I understand you want to help the guys get better, and that's fine if we can do it. Do you have the personnel to do that? I don't know. Maybe we do, maybe we don't. But I'm telling you, you got to do something. It takes one or two moves, not one. Brendan, do you realistically think there's any way, shape, or form they would go after a Machado or Harper?
You have to define go after, because they're going to do the hemming and hawing that they usually do and say we gave it our level best. And I heard Bill DeWitt on the Tim McKernan podcast the other day. He sent a preview out of that where he's asked the question about Machado or Harper, and you can just hear it in his voice that he's not trying to sound like there's no chance, but to me, watching him speak about it, there's no chance. I just don't see it happening. Every offseason we play this game with the big fish, and I usually delude myself into thinking there's a potential to do it. I'm not going to do that this time, and if I was wrong, I will give all the credit to the front office. I'll give all the credit to the ownership, and I will say they went out and finally did what it took, but I don't see it happening, not for those two guys. I think you're a lot more likely to see them, you know, check in and flirt with Josh Donaldson for 2 months and then maybe sign him unless somebody else is willing to pay him a bunch of money. That's the way the Cardinals do it, and I don't necessarily think that changes this offseason. I hope I'm wrong, but I that's kind of how I see it playing out.
Yeah, I don't see him changing this season, but I guarantee you one thing. When Ballpark Village gets about half full and when the stands start looking like L.A., yeah, I couldn't believe L.A.'s stands in a playoff game. They were half empty. Unbelievable. But when they start not bringing 20,000, 15,000, like in the 70s, and they don't bring them into Ballpark Village, DeWitt's going to change his tune.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting thing. I don't know. I'm going to agree with Coach and say that that's what it'll take. Now, a good business person would see that coming. A good business person would see that coming. I'll leave you with this last statement. I think a good business person looks at the crowds in a playoff run. I don't give a shit if school's going on. This is St. Louis.
People, oh, yeah. I agree.
Listen.
Play hooky.
Back when they had the big three going in September in a playoff push, people can say what they want. That wasn't going on. Uh-uh. No, sir.
Not to this extent, certainly. And I agree with you on the schools thing. Like, yeah, that's a thing that happens. But there are reasons to make people go despite that. If you're counting all the reasons to not go, and fans on Twitter really sometimes too irk me with that, where I'll make a comment about the crowds and they'll try to defend Cardinal fans. It's like, look, I love Cardinal fans, but the reality is they're not showing up the way they did, the way they might have in years when you had a more exciting product and a more a product that you knew was going to be in the postseason and that you could get excited about and that you could prepare for an October run. So there are ways to make that come back again rather than just name all the reasons why it's not here now.
hey, I'm 48 years old. I don't go to school, and I didn't have any interest in going to any games in September.
Exactly. Exactly.
And, I know they were in a playoff race. I know they were, but I mean, I don't know, even know how to describe
it. Right now, you're like, I'll believe it when I see it. I'll believe it when I see it. That's kind of where I feel like some Cardinals fans are, rather than I've seen it for years and years in a row, and maybe they're not quite in the wild card at this point, but I saw it the last 10 years, and I know they're going to do it again, so I'm going to go down there and support them. That's not the attitude that fans have right now, and school doesn't have anything to do with that, in my opinion.
All right, good point, Brian. And also, I'm going to say...
Brendan, that's okay.
Brendan, whatever. You begins with a B. So anyway, what I'm going to say... Now I lost my train of thought, Jim. Thanks a lot.
I screwed you, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
Well, think of it.
Oh, fans, going to the game.
Yeah.
Look, I used to hitchhike 89 miles to go to a game. I used to do anything humanly possible to go to a game. I live 20 minutes from the ball yard. I get free tickets whenever I want. And I've been to two games in 2 years, and I love baseball. But I don't like this baseball. And secondly, I'm a purist. Jim, you're a purist. And if they're playing baseball and winning both, then I'll go. Otherwise, I'm not going to go see somebody to get a war or a launch thing or try to hit a home run or Colton Wong swing from the heels with two strikes. I'm not going to go down there and see that.
Well, good stuff. Brennan, I appreciate you joining the show today. If you want to tell our listeners where they can follow you.
Absolutely. It's at BSchaefer12 on Twitter. And I'm putting out some off-season content already for KMOV. I have the starting pitching grades out. You can find that article on my Twitter page. A couple others that I've already put out, and the rest of the team grades will be out in the next couple of days.
All right, my friend, I appreciate you. Sorry for being a little behind today. I'll look forward to chatting with you next week.
Absolutely. I'll talk to you then.
All right. That is Brendan Schaefer. And again, that'll wrap up our three contributors to Bow Ties and Bullshit. Going to chat a little bit longer since I have the opportunity to have Coach Pyle in studio. Coach, I got to tell you, we've had a lot of conversation today about a lot of different things that I think can fix some things when it comes to the Cardinals. I also don't know that I see an easy fix here either. Like, you know, I sit here and I say to myself, man, Manny Machado would make a big difference. I don't think he would make a big difference. But I also think that that's not enough. And isn't that sad to say that Manny Machado's not enough?
Well, he isn't. That's the problem. We've dug ourselves into a hole with these bad signees spending the money. It's not that they don't spend the money. My God, they gave those two relief pitchers a fortune. But the problem is evaluation. Evaluate. Know what you're getting and be sure. Now, that doesn't mean they still can't fall on their face, because they can. But we got to do a better job of evaluating. That's why I want a different GM. I mean, I've met Mo a couple of times, and I've said hello and talked to him and asked him questions. And he seems real intelligent. But that doesn't – we're not playing checkers here or chess. We're playing baseball games, and we need to be able to evaluate that better. And we need a lot of help. But we don't have to go out and spend a lot of money for a reliever again when they don't come through. And let's develop within. Let's bring back Duncan.
I mean, well, here's the deal. Let's. I'm going to end it with some math. And I was told there'd be no math, but I'm going to do some. And it's going to be crude because I don't have the exact numbers in front of me. So I'm gonna basically guess, do a little guessing here. But I know I'm going to be close. We're talking about a team that, while we're sitting here talking about Manny Machado or this or that or this or that, we're talking about a team that goes along the lines of what I said the other day. I come back to pitching. I asked the question, would Alex Reyes have made a difference? Well, I said yes because of a variety of reasons. That's why I come up with the question. But at the end of the day, take a look at something, folks, and I'm going to just end it right here. I want you to think about this. Again, I didn't think Greg Holland was a bad signing. It was a good signing that didn't work. Okay, I don't blame anybody for that one. But the reality of it is, I'm not quite sure what you expect from a team. And again, I'm trying to be realistic. I'm not saying that we're not right to want more, to expect more. Well, that's not my point here. Where I'm going is this. What do you really expect from a team that spent $162 million, okay, $16 million of that, you got $170 million from your right fielder with no power and awful defense. You got in the bullpen, you spent, here's where the math comes in. Do it with me, coach. You were a teacher. $14 million on Holland. I believe it's $7 million to $8 million on Cecil, the way his contract is. Now I believe we're at, let's just call it $21 million. Add in another $4 million for Gregerson, or $5 million. What are we at?
25.
26. $26 million for bullpen guys that you got zero. Zero. I'd rather put some guys from AAA in the bullpen and get something, even if it was zero, and spend $26 million on a player, a hitter.
Well, they spent the money and went to the AAA bullpens and pitchers anyway. And let's get back to another thing. Now, I know Piscotty, why he went to Oakland. I understand that. But if you can, you got to talk to him, you got to use a little psychology, and we could have kept Piscotty here, even though his mother, and that we all know about that. Also, Tommy Pham, he's one of our better ball players and going good, realizing he had some flaws. But my golly, the guy played the game. He hustled. He wanted to win. Maybe he was a little controversial attitude-wise. I don't know. But he could play. Now we got rid of two players that did pretty well once we got rid of them. But we get a guy like Peralta in here, shortstop, who's not a bad shortstop. I mean, a
he
hitter.
He played a lot better than I thought he would.
Well,
The first year and a half.
First year and a half. He can make the routine play. He's like Ernie Banks. He can make the routine play.
Shocked me, to be quite honest.
But he couldn't go in the hole, and he couldn't go to his left or right that well. But, you know, he wasn't the answer. Stuff like that kept taking us downtrend rather than an uptrend. And again, it comes to evaluating the players. And I think we could have kept some players here if we would have used a little bit different philosophy and a little bit different way to do things. And we could have had Pujols. We still could have Piscotty. We still could have, I can go on and on and on. And, Jim, at the start of the show, you said it best. We're playing backups or role player type players as our studs. You can't do that. You've got to have one or two studs, hopefully three studs, and then some role players. But everybody we got out there, except maybe Molina, is a backup. I don't care. You name him that we started their last week with. You tell me who isn't a backup out there.
Well, Matt Carpenter's not a backup, but I think most people, including you, would agree he's an American League player.
Yeah, he's a backup defensively. He's not even a backup.
So, you know, I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's it at the end of the day. I mean, that's where we go. Hey, good stuff, man. I appreciate you being on here today. Had a great time. I want to thank everybody for joining us for the winter edition, unfortunately, the off-season edition of Bow Ties and Bullshit. Don't forget you can learn more about us at twobirdsonabat.com. Subscribe to the show. Do your Amazon shopping. It'll help us with our friends Brian Crock and Andrew Allen, who do all the production work behind the scenes. Find us on Twitter, at Birds on a Bat Show. If you follow us and you're a Cardinal fan, we'll follow you back. Find us on Facebook, Two Birds on a Bat. Type it in, like our page, invite your friends to like our page. We're doing giveaways now. When you see our pinned post on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursday evenings, share that post, like it, jump in the conversation, the comment section. We're pulling names out of there of people that participate that way and putting them in drawings for giveaways. And we've had some people send in some pictures with the stuff we've sent them. It's been a great time, great prizes. Two Birds on a Bat Show on Instagram as well. Proud to be part of lineupmedia.fm, the fastest growing podcast company on the planet, but now home to Yo Radio, the streaming platform that you guys are going to love. Go to your mobile device, download Yo Radio. The update for it's coming out. You guys are going to love it. Pretty cool stuff. Again, happy to be a part of that organization as well. To all of our partners out there, thank you for your continued support. You heard me talk about Randy Green and InnovativeCompanies.com. If you need the construction company, heating and cooling, electric, and now the plumbing division, Randy Green's your man. That's InnovativeCompanies.com. Don't forget to get your barbecue with my man Mike over at Adam's Smokehouse. Not just for lunch anymore. Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays. You can get over there before 7 o'clock as they're open till then. Try their barbecue. It's amazing. All their specials, anything they have is top flight. Don't forget, they do a tremendous amount of catering business. If you have an event that you need something for, the barbecue is the way to go. That's Adam's Smokehouse. Our good friends at Gators Baseball Academy. If you're looking for something different for your son when it comes to baseball, or daughter if she still plays baseball, and for softballers, as they're expanding that division as well. Now available on the Illinois side as well. If you're looking for something that involves developing the kid as much as the player, their four-pillar system will not disappoint. They're an organization that is committed to people, and the people that they put in the dugout, the people that they put on the field, the people that they put on their inside training facilities will have a positive effect on your athlete. That's GatorsBaseballAcademy.com. To Mark Marcuso down at Arlington Greens, thank you for your continued support. Don't forget to get down to Granite City and play the hidden jewel here in the Metro East. Tell Mark Marcuso and the staff we said hello. You won't find a better man than Mark Marcuso at the golf course. For all of us here at Two Birds and a Bat, I leave you. Let's go Birds!
This podcast was a presentation of LightUpMedia.fm.